Thank you for listening to the Police and Crime Podcast with me, Matthew Scott. Firstly, thank you very much to everybody who has left a 5-star review for me on iTunes. This is really appreciated and it does help people to find the show. So please continue to leave your 5-star reviews. But you can also listen to this podcast on Acast, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio or at matthewscott.org.uk, where you'll also find all of the previous episodes. If you've got a comment or a question, please email pcc@matthewscott.org.uk. But you can also connect through Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, LinkedIn, and Instagram. But again, matthewscott.org.uk for more information about this podcast. So thank you very much for joining me on the podcast. It's great to have you with me. Before we get into some of the details about the projects that you and I work together on, could you tell me a little bit about your story, if you don't mind? You founded this charity due to personal experience.
Yeah, that's right. I went in 2013. I went through a divorce, which is nothing unusual about that. Quite standard stuff, really. But it took a long time for the separation to take hold. And in January 2015, my son came to live with me on a full-time basis. And immediately I was presented with quite a few challenges, one of which was leaving a really good position I had in the NHS, because obviously I had parental duties now and I couldn't give the 60 to 70 hours at work. Sure. So that was quite tough, but that was one of the major changes. And then once becoming a single father looking after my son on my own, I was then presented with numerous other challenges, mostly around the loneliness of being a single parent and being a male single parent, in the sense that, you know, I would take him to school, I would pick him up, but I didn't see many other dads around and I couldn't have a conversation with somebody about, you know, how do you do this? How do you do that? And I found it quite isolating in the sense that I couldn't ring my friends because they were always at work. And of course, evenings you're busy with, you know, reading, bit of homework, bedtime, bath time, all that sort of stuff. And so before I knew it, within 6 months, I was literally on my own. I had no one to talk to. And then, of course, along that lines, I thought, well, I can't be alone. There's got to be other people in similar situations to me. But also, there's got to be other guys who have found the whole divorce process, the legal side of all of this, equally challenging. And I wanted to reach out and basically create a community for myself and for my son, because at the same time, he wasn't being invited around for tea, you know, tea around someone's house. Happening was being a, you know, single dad, I was taking him to school, etc., etc., and he was losing out on some spending time with his friends because he wasn't being invited around to anyone else's house for tea. He wasn't sort of making friends or having a community that would be absolutely normal for a child to have. Now, I didn't know whether that was because people didn't want to send around their children around to a single father's house. I had no idea. So that was kind of one of the impetuses to start this Facebook page in March 2017, to create a community for me, but also an opportunity for him to create a community to meet with other fathers and their children, and for him to have some more friends out of school. So that's how the Acorn started in March 2017 on a Facebook page.
Well, that's had a tremendous impact on your life. And I was obviously very interested to hear that you felt that you had to leave your work in order to take up these parental responsibilities, because obviously at a time when successive governments have been trying to make it easier for parents of all types to be parents, as well as carry on working, that you didn't find that support in your working life.
No, and I was extremely disappointed because, you know, I worked for the NHS and I was trying to balance being a full-time parent and work, and I just the balance just couldn't be found. And interestingly, I also thought about, you know, maybe I could get an au pair, but I realised when I started contacting au pairs that actually they weren't prepared to have an au pair with a single father. So that was an equally challenging thing. Think, oh, how am I going to do this? And it, obviously, the natural progression was I had to give up work in order to be a full-time dad.
And you obviously mentioned the isolation that you felt as part of this. Obviously, that's manifested itself in a number of different ways, both for you and also for your son. Was there literally nothing out there? No one, no other support groups locally that you could have turned to?
nothing. There was absolutely nothing out there. There were no father and toddler groups. There were no father and son groups. There was absolutely nothing. Nothing out there at all. I contacted the council. I contacted Kent County Council, and I discovered there's nobody. There's literally nobody out there. And obviously that increases your isolation, because you think, I'm on my own. But I knew in the back of my head, I can't be the only guy. There's got to be other guys out there.
And do you think in part it could be that there is some kind of stigma attached? I asked this, I know it's a challenging question to ask, that there is some kind of stigma attached. You mentioned the au pairs who weren't interested. You mentioned that other parents weren't necessarily sending other children round. Is there something in that, something similar that we see to perhaps with male victims of domestic violence? It doesn't get talked about because it's impacting upon a man rather than a woman.
Exactly. That's exactly it. I do think there is a genuine stigma out there. And I think it's a societal problem, because if you look at just when I tried to become flexible working at work, I wasn't afforded that same kind of equality around managing my work being at home, but also coming in. And I just thought there's got to be something in this, that because I'm a man, people were not necessarily afraid, but they weren't comfortable with sending their children around to my house, or they weren't comfortable inviting my son. It might be some kind of stigma around there. It was it's impossible to say what exactly it is, but it is an exact parallel to some of the work that we do on supporting male victims of domestic abuse.
And obviously you mentioned that you set up the Facebook page to begin with. You started to reach out to other people and try to create that mechanism. Were you hearing similar stories from other people once you had started that process of reaching out?
Yeah, that's when the trickle started. I started getting in, or guys were getting in contact with me saying, you know, the things you're talking about, I'm going through the same thing. I've no one to talk to. I've got no one to take my son out with. Everything that I was feeling was being mirrored with people getting in contact with me. And so I knew then, I thought, right, I need to do something about this.
That's great. And that's obviously you mentioned the Acorn grew, and that's how Dads Unlimited came about, was it?
That's exactly how it came about, yeah.
Is there anything significant in that name? It's very bold, very aspirational, Dads Unlimited. How did you come up with that one?
Well, what I wanted to do was to completely steer away from some of the more activist dad organisations. And I wanted to have something that would hook in dads, but also the Unlimited, around giving people unlimited support. You know, it doesn't matter what your situation is, doesn't matter what your problem is, etc., etc. If I can help in an unlimited way as much as possible, then, you know, together we can achieve something which is great for our kids. And so that's kind of how the name came about.
Brilliant. And obviously I went onto your website to look at some of the other information and the evidential basis that you put together for starting Dads Unlimited. So I was actually shocked by some of this stuff coming out, but again, you know, a shock but also not surprised at the same time. You know, there's one paragraph on your about section, so it's absolutely crucial to this. And what you may not know is that according to the Office of National Statistics, the number of men who are now primary carers for their children has risen by almost 137% in 3 years from 2013. And that number is now 406,000 single dads. That is a tremendous gap out there. Are you seeing that come through locally?
Yes, we are. In fact, it's. I mean, I think that the numbers are going to be growing steadily over many, many years. And it just shone a light to me, thinking that we are an underrepresented, almost invisible part of society, that men are so poor at reaching out for help in every different facet, that when it comes to becoming a single parent primary carer, we just battle these things on our own. And actually, we do need to reach out and say, you know, to single mothers, you've been at this for years. How do you do this? And I remember, you know, a really funny story where I was actually talking to a single mother, and I said to her, look, I'm really struggling with keeping my son's white shirts absolutely white. I just don't know how to do it. And bless her heart, she came around and said, look, I'll show you how you do this sort of stuff. But it's these small things that I had the confidence to go and just ask some. But it all makes a difference. If we can help and assist men just to open up and be brave about their emotions, things will change.
And of course, starting such an organisation from scratch is a very difficult task. And obviously, you've been very, very bold with your aspirations. It's great to see. Can you tell me a little bit about some of the organisations that have supported you along this journey?
I mean, obviously, yourself, the Police and Crime Commissioner's Office, have been a phenomenal support.
I wasn't angling for a compliment, but thank you very much.
Absolutely fine. But yeah, but I'm being completely candid about this. But actually, as things have progressed, we have now got great support from Kent Public Health. We have fantastic support from KCC's Children's Services. We are working very closely with an organisation called CAFCAS, and that's the Children and Families Court Advisory Support Service. So much so that we are now sort of strategic alliance partners about how can we support children of separated parents better. I've recently been very lucky to have good conversations with the East Kent Judiciary. So clearly we are beginning to make inroads with organisations who can see the value of what we're trying to achieve, which is not about activism. This is about how can we work locally better in order to improve the outcomes for children with separated parents. I think being in Ashford, I was very lucky that I had a good relationship with our MP, Damien Green, who sent me a copy of the Helping Troubled Families strategy document. And he made the point to me that, you know, parental conflict, separation, et cetera, has such detrimental effect on children from separated families that not enough is being done to address this. And so having that kind of insight and contacts to sort of lean upon has helped shape the ambition of the organisation.
That's great to hear. So obviously it goes deep. Obviously money is a big, big factor. And obviously I know that has been very much harder to come across in recent years, but also in terms of some of the more practical support that you've had as an organisation as well. How has that been helped you get off the ground?
Well, I think from the Tudor Trust, who are one of our major funders now, they've given us a lot of support around governance and assurance. We're working quite strongly with the Stronger Kent Communities as yes. well, who support local charities, and they've given us some advice around finance, around operational management, and we've recently been nominated by Kent County Council Public Health for some leadership coaching with an organisation in Canterbury. And so all these things are beginning to help us not necessarily create a business plan, but create something which will have a fundamental transformational value to the family justice sector. But what we've also discovered is the work that we do touches upon so many other elements, not only public health, children's services, but the police, but the family justice system, mediation and mental health counselling. The thing has started to grow and grow tentacles faster than I would like. I'm trying to keep the genie in the bottle, to be honest. But it makes us realise that this is bigger than what we had thought. And what we're trying to do with CAFCAS and public health is raise the awareness of parental conflict onto a public health agenda because of the way it impacts on so many other different public services.
Absolutely. And of course, I think that sort of brings it quite closely round to where you and I have been working together through my office. We've done two projects together now, I believe, obviously the Mental Health Cafe, but also the dispute resolution work as well. Do you want to firstly talk about the cafe? Because obviously mental health being a key priority of mine, that was obviously something that maybe you yourself will have dealt with because of the impact that isolation has. So of course, if you want to start on the Mental Health Cafe, and then we'll talk about the other projects.
Of course. So the Mental Health Cafe, the genesis of it was I wanted to create a thing once a month that men in my situation could come together and start talking about whatever it was they were going through, but to try to decrease those feelings of loneliness and isolation and to talk about openly how they're feeling from a mental health perspective. So I started that and had three or four guys come along. And with all credit to yourself, due to the funding, we've now established this as a really important event once a month where we now get between 20 to 25 men turning up between the ages of around 18 to 57.
Brilliant.
From what was initially Ashford, Folkestone and Canterbury, but now they're coming from all over Kent and Medway and South London. And they come along and they hear everyone's stories. And the really important thing out of them was that we start talking about things around, self-harm, around suicidal ideation, around loneliness, around isolation, around not being able to talk to people. And it's so stark that these guys come into this room, they start talking, and you suddenly realise they haven't told their mums or dads. Yeah. They haven't told their brothers or sisters. They haven't told their cousins, but they're telling us. And the really important thing, after me and my team received some suicide prevention training, is we started talking about openly about suicide. And because of the support group meeting that happens once a month, we obviously, as you know, we measure and monitor everything about what we're trying to do. We have diverted 91 men from feelings of suicidal ideation to a place where they are no longer having suicidal ideation.
Wow.
And that is a huge amount of people, because they feel that they can talk about it. And as we've been trained, talking about it is the first step in recovery.
Exactly.
And we also have our mental health counsellors present in the room. So should there be any instance, or one of the taboos we wanted to break was that it's all very well giving a guy, here's a card, go and see a mental health counsellor, ring them up and make an appointment. We realised these guys are not going to ring, and they don't. So we have our mental health counsellors present in the room at the same time in order to have a face-to-face 60-second interaction in order to break the barrier of, you can come and talk to me. And so that's been really, really good. And these guys who are now attending their mental health counselling sessions with our counsellors, we have seen a 12-point improvement in their mental health on the Warwick-Edinburgh mental health scale, which is, you know, some people may say 12 points doesn't sound a lot, but it really is. If you've got a guy who's moved from thinking about taking his own life to not thinking about taking their own life, it's a huge bridge that they've travelled over. And that's because of the support group meeting. And every time they come along, they always say, do you know what, I really look forward to turning up here because I'm with friends. And never have I felt unable to talk about what I want to talk about, because immediately the 20 other guys in the room turn around and say, I get it. And the other important aspect of it, as I said about perspective, these men, when they start talking about their stories, it's a bit of a jokey, so we make it lighthearted. It's not a, you know, it's not a heavy session. But they turn around and say, God, I thought my life was bad. Yours is much worse. I feel much better. But that's really important. And now, because of that, they've started networking. They're starting building things together. And off of the support group meeting, and I hope you don't mind me sort of being a bit verbose about this, we were awarded some funding from the National Lottery to develop community activities so that we can then start to put on every month a couple of activities that these men can take their children to have an activity with other men and children and start developing friendships. And so we've put on theatre trips, zookeeper days, bushcraft days, clip and climb sessions, monthly cinema club. And that has been brilliant, because all of a sudden these guys are saying, do you know what, I've got something to do with my children, not McDonald's, yeah, you know, bowling or cinema. I've got other things that I can do. And that has really begun to grow. And that all came from the support group meeting.
Oh, that's fantastic. I mean, again, there's so many positives in and amongst that, obviously, with suicide being the biggest killer of men under 45, that so many people, you are literally, you're saving lives, but also you're impacting upon families more widely, because it's not obviously not just 91 men who are not taking their lives, it's their children and their wider families who all become impacted by that. That's absolutely tremendous and very well done on all of that. But it was interesting to hear about, you know, some of the activities and the more practical things that have come out about that, because when I start to think about it, and obviously I've got a daughter myself, and I think that, you know, when I'm off and I'll take her out and give and I'm lucky enough, obviously mum's at home with us as well, and I give her a break, very well deserved one, and I go out and I'll go to maybe soft play somewhere, you know, it is very much also an absent space for dads. It's not something necessarily that you will see very men at, and having those places where you feel that you're more confident to talk to people, and actually that you are playing a productive and doing lots of different things with your child, and having those experiences must have had a tremendous impact upon those people as well.
Yeah, and there's something more subtle as well at play, which we don't necessarily talk about, but it's one of the ambitions that we have, is that, you know, when that child goes back to mum, either Sunday night, Monday morning, whatever, he or she can say, I had a great time, I did this, or I did that. And it just helps the parental conflict reduce, because what we're trying to say is he knows what he's doing. He's doing something constructive and interesting. And, you know, what we've got lined up in the future is we're going to start putting on cooking classes. We're going to start putting on things like maths and English lessons, because I don't know about yourself, Matthew, but when I started doing homework with my son, suddenly realised how much maths I didn't know.
Yeah, I always take those online tests that you occasionally see in the newspapers. Could you pass this GCSE? Yeah. And I think, wow, the tests really have changed. I've got more stupid.
So we're going to put on some lessons so we can help dads, you know, learn a bit of how new maths is done, English, et cetera, et cetera. Again, in order to help these guys in their co-parenting relationship, because that's the ideal. We want all of these people to have a great co-parenting relationship and not be at each other's throat, because the effect of that on their mental health is just no good. Sure. And so these are very subtle things that we're trying to do in a way that we don't necessarily advertise, but we hope is a long-term effect of.
Brilliant. Obviously, you mentioned you're trying to keep the genie in the bottle. Successful projects, obviously, expand. Mm. What projects are you looking to expand when it comes to the mental health side of things? You've obviously got the other project now, which is the dispute and trying to reduce disputes between parents. What could you maybe tell us a little bit about that project first, and then some of the other things that you're going to look at doing next?
So there's the one-to-one mentoring service, which basically is when a guy comes forward, we say, you know, we'll appoint them a mentor and we'll try and support them through the difficulties that they're going through. The mentoring service has been an absolute runaway success. To date, we have supported, in Kent alone, 480 men.
Wow.
Of those 480 men, we have diverted around 300 of them away from using the police or social services as their first port of call. They come to us first. So where there are tensions or where there are triggers that may upset a co-parent relationship, they come to us and we work with them to try to get them to a better place where they can, you know, necessarily, if for example, they have to go to court, we will support them all the way through the legal proceedings. And I think out of the mentoring service, because it's been so well received, we've pulled off a bit of a coup in the sense that last year, last March, Dads Unlimited was awarded a licensed access certificate from the Bar Standards Board. What this enables us to do is to instruct a barrister on behalf of a client to represent them in court. Now, the reason this is important, in the work we do with public health, we have identified, working with them, that three of the main triggers behind male suicide is debt, family breakdown, and self-harm. Now, self-harm, most people would translate as, you know, cutting or something quite, you know, hurtful to your physical self. But what we're finding is these guys are probably drinking more than normal, but not enough to pop up on an A&E radar. They're looking at their children growing up virtually on their former partner's Facebook page, and they hurt themselves because they don't see their children. And so we realise we need to do that, and that's where the mental health comes in. But the debt was really important. So what we have been able to do is slightly strong arm, I'm going to be honest, quite a few barristers to say, would you work on a fixed fee basis? Forget about the thousands of pounds you could earn. How about doing this in order to improve the mental health and well-being of these men and mothers and children? Would you take a significant cut on those fees? And do you know what, Matthew? They have.
Brilliant.
And we have been able to support these guys for a couple of hundred quid. And that reduces the debt burden, because litigation in family law, as you know, is extortionately expensive. Sure. But this attacks that and says to the system, there is a better way, a more compassionate way of doing this, where actually the outcome for the child at the end of it is much better. And so because of that, you know, we work very hard in trying to help as many men as possible. But the genie's out of the bottle. We are getting far more referrals than we've ever expected. And our referrals are coming from the school, from schools, from the police, from children's services. But our number one referrers are new wives and girlfriends, because these men are not opening up. And so it's their new partners who ring us and say, please help him. So fantastic. It has been a runaway success.
Congratulations. I mean, again, you know, such a big impact, because you're fostering positive relationships between parents and their children, but also reducing demand on the wider public sector as well. It's phenomenal.
Whilst I'm on the subject, the other thing which popped up, which I'm sure we've talked about anyway, is we've had 119 men in 2018 say to us that they've been a victim of domestic abuse. Now, obviously, we were really concerned because we take it at face value. But working with Kent Police, you know, we've been able to have a PCSO to help us run these men through a DASH interview to see, you know, how bad this domestic abuse is. And surprisingly, most of them turned up medium to high level abuse. But none of these men ever rang the police, not sure. One of them. And actually working now alongside, hand in hand with victim support, we are now giving these men a bit of confidence to say, look, go and speak to victim support. Let them support you and let's have the confidence that, you know, we'll go to the meeting with you. We'll hold your hand throughout all this. Don't be ashamed. Don't be embarrassed. But that has been one of the other really interesting things, as well as, and this is a bit of an unknown thing, my chair of trustees, Susie, who is a phenomenal chair, who really, really supports the work that we do, is LGBT. And she's often pushing us to say, what are we doing about same-sex family breakdown? And so we are beginning to work with couples who are same-sex. And actually, the issues are exactly the same. So it's good that the diversity of the people that we're trying to support has been really helpful. And, you know, as a result, because of the success that we've had, we're now having grandparents come to us for help and mothers saying, look, you know, I know you're a dad's charity, but could you help me? And, you know, we're a broad church. Of course we can. We'll help whoever needs help.
Brilliant. And obviously, you're doing this work in the county of Kent. Obviously, you've had people from South East London approaching you as well. But what we clearly have is a national issue here that is not being met. Obviously, I posed to you before we started recording that that key question. We have a new government. Mm-hmm. We have a Queen's speech coming up, perhaps, depending on which way the legal judgment has gone. We're recording this before that has actually been published, so we might be scooped by that. But, you know, how would you change? Is it a matter of the law needs to change in order to support dads and parents better? Or is it a case of there needs to be better funding, better coordination? You know, if you, you know, the question, if you were the minister for the day, how would you improve things for single dads and parents generally?
So I think this is a brilliant question. And I'll tell you why I say this. A lot of the work that we do, we have, as I said earlier, we've become a strategic alliance partner with CAFCAS. Off of the back of that, we have had some really good meetings with a chap called Sir James Munby, who was the former president of the Family Court Division. And I believe we're due to meet the new president, aren't we, in a couple of months, Sir Andrew McFarlane. One of the things they always say to us is, if you expect us to, as lawmakers, to change the law and make a difference, you'll be waiting a very long time. The legal system is like an oil tanker. It takes such a long time to turn. There are better ways. So off of the back of that, we're working with CAFCAS to develop what's called a National Alliance for Co-Parenting. Underneath that, last week we had a meeting with His Honour Judge Scarrett, who's a designated family judge for Kent and Medway. And we are now leading the charge on developing a local Kent-based Family Co-Parenting Alliance. Now, this is really important because we want the right partners in the room, from mental health all the way to policing and children's services, the NSPCC, etc., to say, how can we do something locally that can then emanate up to the national level to make a change? And one of the things we are looking for, and if I had a magic wand, it wouldn't be a law change. What I would like to see is a presumption in favour of shared parenting unless there is evidence to the contrary. And that's what we'd love to see. And that's one of the campaigns we are working on, to say when people are going to court or are beginning that legal proceedings conversation, actually, if from the outset it said shared parenting is the presumption unless there's evidence to suggest otherwise, that would help a lot because it would reduce parental conflict and the narrative coming from the judiciary would then chime with what's coming out as well. Similarly, we would also like to see much more spotlight on the mental health and well-being of those people who are going through family breakdown because it's so hard. So those are the things we would like to see. A law change is, I think, is a blunt instrument because actually, once you change the law, you know, it's very hard to police. Whereas this is more subtle. And the subtlety will have greater traction in the community and in society because the change will last longer and it won't be forced upon people. It will be slowly changing people's behaviours and understanding of what is best for that child. So there, sorry, it's a very long answer.
No, it's good.
But that's kind of the thing we're working with. And in the last couple of weeks, because we are having this narrative, you know, again, I go back to the Acorn March 2017 Facebook page. Next week, I've been in a privileged position to have been appointed to the Nuffield Family Justice Observatory Stakeholder Council. So right. I've been appointed to that next week. We're meeting for our first meeting to talk about just this. How do we get local intelligence up to a very national level, taking into account every facet of public service, from police, mental health services, the NHS, public health, education, social services, in a room to say, how can we work better together to improve outcomes?
That's incredible. Many congratulations. And
thank you.
Again, you know, and this has all happened very, very quickly, and to have achieved that level of success and impact is a testament to you, your trustees and your volunteers, councillors and supporters.
Thank you.
That is a phenomenal achievement. Before we wrap up, just want to give you this opportunity to plug the organisation. Where can people go to find out more about Dads Unlimited?
So you could go to our website, www.dadsunlimited.org.uk. Lots of information on there. There's a registration form on there as well. So if you do need support or help, please do fill out the registration form. That will come into our systems and we can appoint a mentor to help you. The support helpline, which runs from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday to Friday, is 01233 680150. The line is open at night and on weekends for emergencies. So please do, if you are in a challenging situation, please do call us. Otherwise, there's our Facebook page as well, which you can find us as Dads Unlimited. And please, you know, as much support we can give you, we will. If you need help, we'll be there. At the end of the day, I think the message to give to everyone is, anyone going through this situation, you're not alone. There is help out there and we will help you.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. And thank you very much again for joining me on the podcast. Thank you.
Thank you, Matthew.